Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rickrout.
And today we have a really special episode. This is one of my favorite episodes every year that we do. The night that the Oscar shortlists come out, the three of us get together. And yes, I said three of us. More of that in a second. We get together and we talk about the shortlists. We break down the mentions in a number of categories. We'll get into what those are. But first, welcome back to the pod, Bennett Prosser.
Hello, I'm still here. A week later, I haven't left. I've been sitting in the recording waiting for you guys to return after our awards season catch-up last week. Sophia, I agree. This is a highlight of the mid-season. We've had some awards already, at least some nominations. A lot of critics groups have gone, and now we start to hear from people in the industry. This is kind of the first inkling that we get from an actual industry group, in this case being the proper Academy and its branches, of what is on their minds. It's a pretty unreliable list sometimes of actually knowing what they are thinking about, because, you know, we're obviously not getting short lists for things like acting or all of the crafts, but it is an interesting spot to take a pulse. And we definitely saw some interesting things come through today. So looking forward to getting through it.
Yeah, I think with these lists, we're going to mention all of the surprises and some of the films that are hanging on by a thread. And this really is that moment, apart from maybe the Golden Globe nominations. That feels like we're getting closest to the industry of what we have so far. We'll go through all 12 categories today. So two of those are new. We usually have 10. We'll read through all of the mentions on those shortlists and kind of talk about what we thought we would see, what's there, and maybe how that can be narrowed down. Bennett, like you said, I feel like these lists are tech heavy. So when we see that Sinners is in the lead, I feel like we kind of expected that, one, because the movie's doing so well, but two, because it's such a technical feat. So definitely along those lines, you know, we see Tron, Ares get a few mentions, but maybe not some others that we were expecting. So those are the kinds of things to think about today. This isn't the end-all be-all. In terms of those acting shortlists or longlists, those that we do see come from BAFTA, and those will be on January 9th, and that kind of gives us a list also there. But I think to get right into it, I mentioned 12 categories. The two new categories are cinematography and casting. Cinematography, not a new category, but new to the shortlists, and casting, a totally new category this year. We also have documentary feature, international feature, makeup and hairstyling, music, original score and original song, sound, visual effects, and all of the short film categories in live action, documentary, and animated short. We'll discuss the short films when those nominations are announced. The shortlists are available. If you want to find them online, those that either are free on YouTube or through different sites, or to rent, feel free to watch them. I think that's a fun way to kind of get ahead of the game and feel like you're one of the Academy. And as we'll talk about maybe in some of the rules, all of the Academy can vote for certain categories at the shortlist step, at the nomination level, and then with final voting, if you have seen enough of those mentioned films. So I think that's a more inclusive way. And there is a new rule this year that they will be keeping track through the Academy platform of what you've watched, or if you've seen something in a theater, you have to write that down. And it's kind of like a nice audit in a way to make sure that they're actually watching these movies. And that's something that we mention every year. So I'm happy about that. I think that's a nice inclusion so far.
I agree. Keep this in mind. I'm going to ask you now, but you have the duration of the episode to think of your answer. If you could hear one Academy member's reaction to one of the films that they will have to watch from the shortlist today, who would you pick and what would the movie be? Keep that in mind. I'm going to ask it again when we get to the end of the episode.
Great question.
I have some ideas.
My eyes just went so wide.
Yeah. But Nick, in talking about the different shortlist categories, so it's important, I think, when we're going through these to think about, okay, so these shortlists are really based on that particular branch. So it's really cool, I think, to see how a particular group of artisans might be thinking about the work in a film and maybe their overall love for a film and their support for it. We'll also talk about bake-offs. So a couple of categories have bake-offs: makeup and hairstyling, sound, visual effects, and now casting. Very eager to hear any tea that comes out of the casting bake-off and what that might be like. But a bake-off, for listeners who don't know, essentially these shortlisted teams will gather and they will give a presentation on their work as part of a bake-off, and then that will help the members determine the vote. So very cool little detail. I think let's just get right into our first category, which is casting. So this is a brand new category. Like you mentioned, Nick, we have 10 mentions here. So 10 movies that are eligible to be nominated. Those are Frankenstein, Hamnet, Marty Supreme, One Battle After Another, The Secret Agent, Sentimental Value, Sinners, Surratt, Weapons, and Wicked for Good. What do we think of this inaugural list for our casting category?
I think it makes sense that the Best Picture list has good casting, and a lot of these films have a lot of actors who we think are in their respective races as well. But I was really hoping that the list of films mentioned would be entirely made up of the Surratts and Weapons and Secret Agent list, which very enthused that those are on there and not a couple of the maybe more predictable American films. But maybe this is just, you know, a first round of them getting their feet wet and knowing kind of what they like and what they want to highlight. So maybe we'll learn more also from like the bake-off conversations and kind of what come out of those. But Nick, what do you think?
I mean, I was expecting to have most of those Best Picture potential nominees. I think the surprises mainly being Surratt, which also had 4 other mentions today. I think that's huge. I was also talking to somebody that was a patient and she was like, oh my God, I love Sergei. And it was like, oh my God. Like, I had no idea who he is before I saw that movie. But the fact that people are familiar with international actors in films that are smaller, and that film in particular has a lot of non-professional actors. So I think that is just so interesting. The Surratt of it all is interesting in itself. And I think Weapons being on there, I'm thinking casting of overall, who did the best job of getting all of these actors together that are performing at their best. And I know this list might seem a bit bland, but I think it's because of a lot of those top movies have all of those qualifiers. And so I don't think on the whole I'm upset about it. I think some of the films that we're missing make me a little upset. The first thing that I noticed is that Wake Up Dead Man wasn't here. And that's something that I think there has been a lot of love for since its release. And that's so recent. That was before these shortlists were made. And that is the public, but that cast to me is just so good together. So with voting, it still has potential, but maybe for a first list, it's not here, but this is going to change over time also. So we have nothing to go on, and I think this is okay for a starting point.
Yeah, so a few things here. I think it's interesting that something like Wake Up Dead Man is missing, because I think some people wondered if, and I think I wondered this too, if they would skew towards larger ensemble pieces, because that feels like an obvious no-brainer to mention here, and it's not here. I think that showcasing international films here is really interesting. The Secret Agent and Surratt getting in. I think I expected Sentimental Value to be here because A.V. Kaufman worked on that, and they're a very well-known casting director. And I think something like Weapons, what's very cool there is that Weapons basically had a brand new cast when you think about what happened with that movie. It was originally supposed to be Pedro Pascal, Renata Reinsve, Brian Tyree Henry. I think Tom Burke was supposed to be in it. And we have an entirely new cast, basically. I think Austin Abrams was the only holdover from that original cast of the main group. So that's a really inspired mention here. And then I think all of these groups really have discoveries within them, which is pretty cool. Non-professional actors. But I'll also point out something that Eric Anderson of Awards Watch shared with me, which is that we don't have any repeats. Like, for example, Nina Gold is the casting director for J. Kelly. She's mentioned here for Hamnet. Or Jennifer Venditti, who's the casting director for Marty Supreme, is not here for Begonia. Francine Maisler did Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. That's not here. She has Sinners. So we're not actually seeing anyone have the possibility of being a double nominee in this category. We don't even have it here on the shortlist, which I think is interesting.
I agree. I had not even, I think, in the time since these came out and us talking now, I haven't looked at the actual casting directors who would be the ones getting nominated for these. So I do like that. I like that spreading it out a little more. Like we mentioned Secret Agent and Surratt. I have not had the chance to see Surratt yet, but thinking of Secret Agent and that deep cast of so many people that you see in one or two scenes or that become very memorable and how good that film is at kind of creating a sense of community. That to say that that is a casting director who I assume does not have any other ones in the race this year, but by spreading it out a little more and not mentioning the same casting director more than once, then that's where you get the opportunity for more fringe contenders getting in for this category.
I think in mentioning Secret Agent, I loved the Doña Sebastiana character, and that makes me think of this showing up, that this is another way to honor actors that aren't even in the acting race or ensembles that may not show up in picture, but as a whole, you can honor the casting director for those decisions. So I think that's maybe something else to look at and another way to look at what has shown up, what hasn't shown up, and how this will get narrowed down to five. So next up, we have cinematography. This is new to shortlists, and as a qualification, it said it's a shortlist of between 10 and 20 films. How we get there, we don't know yet, but there were 16 mentions on the list, and those are Ballad of a Small Player, Begonia, Die My Love, F1, Frankenstein, Hamnet, Marty Supreme, Nouvelle Vague, One Battle After Another, Sentimental Value, Sinners, Surratt, Song Sung Blue, Sound of Falling, Train Dreams, and Wicked for Good. We have some obvious shockers here. Surratt again showing up. This is one of the only times we've seen Nouvelle Vague show up. Song Sung Blue. I don't know if I would have nominated
it. How does that one look?
Yeah, I was going to say, Nick, I think this might be your time to review Song Sung Blue.
Because everyone is bashing it before, and I have now seen it, and I am such a proponent of this film and Kate Hudson getting a nomination. So this is my NIAID, which, if we have any listeners from 2 years ago, I loved Annette Bening and that film, and, you know, Jodie Foster. It's campy, but it's dramatic in the right ways, and they know when to dial it back. And that's exactly how Song Sung Blue is. It is quite a roller coaster tonally, but I don't say that negatively in a way that other films have. Again, because I think of how it channels the genres that it's shooting for. I was in shock. I was crying. I was laughing. I was singing. So this comes out on Christmas. I think it is very much for people who love Neil Diamond, but I would still recommend people go see it. I never would have thought it would have gotten into cinematography. So I think, you know, that's great that it did, but just because it's mentioned here doesn't mean that it's going to move on because it's shocking us that it's showing up.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted your snippet review. And I also need to ask you, would you recommend people dream big with Marty Supreme or dream huge with Song Sung Blue? Because those are their taglines.
No.
Well,
I'm serious.
And we have Testament of Ann Lee. I'm like, where are the people who are mashing up these names to see them all on Christmas Day? I would say go see Song Sung Blue first and then Marty Supreme.
Okay.
I think Testament of Ann Lee has to be its own thing. So maybe go the day after Christmas or vice versa. But it's an eclectic combination, I would say. So back to cinematography. How do we feel about this list?
Well, the cinematographer of Song Sung Blue is Amy Vincent, who has not done many movies lately, but it looks like she may be Craig Brewer's regular cinematographer, at least was. Like, she did Hustle and Flow and Black Snake Moan. But also, she shot Eve's Bayou.
Oh.
Wow.
Which jumps out in her filmography as a very visually striking film. So, good for her. But yeah, so otherwise in cinematography, I was most excited for Sound of Falling getting in. A film that has not been showing up as much in critics' prizes or kind of other conversations since Cannes. It felt like a big phenomenon hearing about it coming out of Cannes, but it has not really shown up. I think it's kind of most of its like lunch has gotten eaten by Neon and all of their international contenders. So having it show up in somewhere here, like the craft category, where it's completely deserved in cinematography, at least just getting the mention, it's very exciting to me. And Sophia, you mentioned right before we started recording that the cinematographer of the film is married to the director.
Yeah. Fabian Gamper is the cinematographer, and he is married to Masha Shalinsky, our director here, which I think is so cool. I love finding that out, just little facts about how people are connected on different films. But I agree with you, Bennett. Love the Sound of Falling mention here. I feel like it's also an important reminder, really, that some of these critics groups just start to kind of fall in line with each other, and they might just start to mention popular picks for international feature. But like we're seeing here, you know, Sound of Falling clearly has some support that was able to get in over No Other Choice, for example. That's not here. And I would say that that also has some pretty striking cinematography. I wish that The Testament of Ann Lee was here. I think, you know, seeing something like Wicked for Good instead of something so visually stunning hurts a little bit.
Yeah.
But another surprise pick that I did really like is Die My Love. I was happy to see that show up here because I think that that film is also really, really beautiful. And I love the cinematography.
Do we think there could be any outliers like Ed Lockman showing up for Maria?
It's a good question, because I think part of the reason why Ed Lockman showed up was because he's Ed Lockman. Like, that just felt like it was like the industry just chiming in and saying, no one likes the movie Maria, but Ed Lockman, his work here is beautiful. Like, you're not going to nominate Angelina Jolie or, you know, any of the technical components of that movie, but he made it in. I think just looking at this, you know, they love black and white sometimes. So if I had to pick one, I would say they'd do Nouvelle Vague, but that's a real like out of left field pick. I'm not making that prediction yet, but I could see like if they did go far outside the box, it would be because they like black and white. And it's very crisp, recreating that look of the French New Wave. I feel like they could go for it.
I think Die My Love is a little similar to that in that, you know, it has Jennifer Lawrence behind it. She hasn't really been in the conversation like Angelina Jolie was at first, but, you know, she could help carry that film across the line. I love that mention. I'm glad that even Bugonia is here. Train Dreams, obviously, and Surratt, which I think is, you know, all of its mentions. I'm going to be bringing it up all day, but, you know, cinematography, sound, and score really do work together so well in that film. And I did want to mention with casting, 9 out of the 10 mentions have a female casting director, and we do have 3 female cinematographers here. And I think one that has been in the lead for Sinners, Autumn Durald-Arkapa, she could be our first female Filipino and African-American Creole cinematographer ever to win. So I think it would be very cool, especially for her incredible work in Sinners. And after a rewatch, I was just as in love with that movie as I was 6 months ago. So I think that she is mentioned and in the lead is so deserved.
I think she has just as good of, or maybe even a better shot than Ari Wegner did for The Power of the Dog. She, of course, lost to Greg Fraser for Dune and Mandy Walker for Elvis. She also got pretty close, I think, in the end, winning ASC. So I think she has a good shot to win. We'll see. But yeah, this shortlist, I love that we have a shortlist again. It's interesting that it's a sliding scale. And, you know, we haven't had a cinematography shortlist since 1979. So I'm glad they brought it back.
Oh.
Yeah. The year of all that jazz. One of my favorite movies of all time. So next we'll go to documentary feature. So we'll talk through some of the precursors that we've already had as we're getting into the mentions here. But we've had the IDA Documentary Awards and the Cinema Eye Honors already. We also have PGA nominations. But our mentions here and documentary branch members also vote on the documentary shorts. So our 15 features mentioned, we have The Alabama Solution, Apocalypse in the Tropics, our title of the day, Coexistence My Ass.
Exclamation point.
Exclamation point. Come See Me in the Good Light, Cover Up, Cutting Through Rocks, Folk Tales, Holding Liat, Mr. Nobody Against Putin, Mistress Dispeller, My Undesirable Friends Part 1, Last Air in Moscow, The Perfect Neighbor, Seeds, 2,000 Meters to Andreevka, and Yanuni. What do you guys think of these? I think just in general, we have some big snubs or misses here.
Okay.
Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk. That was one I was expecting to see here. The Tale of Cillian, that won 2 prizes at the IDA Documentary Awards and was nominated at PGA, not here. And also Afternoons of Solitude, which has appeared on a few critics' lists for Best of the Year, including the Cahiers du Cinéma that comes out every year. So what do you guys think of this list, though?
Yeah, I think with documentary, the shortlist always ends up being about half films that I've heard of and half that I haven't. They're cutting down such a large list of somewhere, I think, over 300 submissions. So there are always snubs. I think that, like we mentioned last week, the kind of surge or regular appearance, at least, of My Undesirable Friends is continuing forth with that showing up on the list. I think it's over 5 hours. So I don't know how often those make it in. But yeah, I also had a couple additional surprise snubs, which is more likely to happen in a category like this where there's such a long list of submissions. But Below the Clouds, Francesco Rossi's film that was in Venice and I got to see in Toronto. And then Predators, which if you'd asked me a while ago, I would have thought that that would be in line for the win. The documentary that's kind of grappling with the TV show To Catch a Predator. So that didn't make it in. So I think I'm more disappointed in some docs that I've seen and loved not making the list than I have like opinions about what did make the list. And I think that happens every year here.
I think another one that I had just seen on top lists along with Afternoons of Solitude was Orwell 2+2=5 by Raoul Peck. I haven't seen that, but again, I've seen it show up throughout the year. I think we have a good list of smaller documentaries and larger ones. I love to see the ones that we have mentioned. Cover Up, Apocalypse in the Tropics is made by Petra Costa, who made The Edge of Democracy, also about Brazilian politics and presidencies. I wonder if My Undesirable Friends is kind of like an FU to make people watch a 5.5-hour documentary because things like that don't often show up, ones that are politically relevant and important. And we've had documentaries about Russia and Ukraine mentioned, and we do today with 2,000 Meters to Andreevka. I think that's very much in the race. And Navalny, which won a few years ago. my favorite in the list that is high up on my list for top of the year is Come See Me in the Good Light, which did earn 6 nominations, the most out of the Cinema Eye Honors. And that's a documentary about Andrea Gibson's struggle with cancer. That's on Apple TV Plus. They rarely nominate biographies or movies like this, so I'm kind of scared that it may not show up, even though it's beloved in different circles. But I would be nominating this for sure. So I think we have a great list. The Perfect Neighbor, you both have mentioned before. That's on Netflix. Seeds was also highly nominated at the Cinema Eye Honors. And Yanuni, I saw a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio with one of the actresses from that. So I'm like, well, there's a big push for something like that that's smaller. And so I think we have a nice mix here of subjects. Next up, we have International Feature, our feature mentions here from Argentina, Belén, Brazil's The Secret Agent, from France, It Was Just an Accident, from Germany, Sound of Falling, from India, Homebound, from Iraq, The President's Cake, from Japan, Kokuo, from Jordan, All That's Left of You, from Norway, Sentimental Value, from Palestine, Palestine 36, from South Korea, No Other Choice, from Spain, Surat, from Switzerland, Late Shift, from Taiwan, Left-Handed Girl, and from Tunisia, The Voice of Hind Rajab. You know, right off the bat, we mentioned My Father's Shadow last week, and that was my biggest miss here. I would also say The Mysterious Gaze of the Flamingo, which I really love from Chile, isn't here. But of what we have, a lot of that was expected. I was going through, and really, we only have a few surprises, I would say. Kokuho was at TIFF, and Homebound was one of the international audience runner-ups. So I think some of those showing up kind of shows widespread support, also public support of some of these nominees. I know we have Sean Baker behind Left-Handed Girl, which is on Netflix. Surat, again. Happy It's Here. I think maybe it does have a really good chance of showing up. I wouldn't have said that maybe a few weeks ago, but I think the shortlist really showed its support there. How do we feel about No Other Choice? You know, we talked about it missing in cinematography, and Park Chan-wook's films of late don't show up. And that's, I really don't understand that. They're some of the most beautiful films ever made. But do we think it has a good chance? I think earlier in the year, we would have been like, yeah, Best Picture, Park Chan-wook mm-hmm. for director, maybe. Like, it's kind of fallen behind.
Yeah, I have it out of my predictions right now for International Feature. I've always been a little bit dubious of it just because I think the default response is to look to Parasite and say, oh, look, they've embraced Korean cinema. But that is such a one-off case where, like, that movie, I think, was so beloved. And clearly, you know, it's a perfect film. But they haven't gone with director Park's films before. And Decision to Leave, I think, was even more in the Academy's wheelhouse than something like No Other Choice. Like, it's so, I think, handsomely made and precise in a way that No Other Choice is really well made and very fun. And it's tackling, I think, so many themes that could resonate with voters. But it not showing up in other places, and I think it feels a bit weaker in adapted screenplay than I maybe expected. I also just think with Neon has so many titles. And clearly, I think Sentimental Value, The Secret Agent, and It Was Just an Accident, and now Surat are stronger. Like, I don't think they're going to pull a 5 for 5 and get all 5 nominees in.
Bennett, what are your thoughts?
On the thought of Parasite being a little bit of a one-off, or at least not kind of opening the floodgates for Korean cinema at the Oscars as much as we may have thought that it would, Parasite is the only South Korean entry in this category to ever be nominated, let alone win. Hmm. There's Decision to Leave, No Other Choice, and then Burning from 2018 were the only other ones that made the shortlist.
My beloved Burning.
A great Burning. Lee Chang-dong's Burning.
Oh.
So I think that is interesting where South Korean culture has permeated in a ton of places throughout the world. And in America, we have K-pop demon hunters to talk about soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that it has become kind of a very, very just normal part of even American culture, that it is interesting that for as much as No Other Choice was really played like crazy when we were at Toronto, and everyone seems to at least like it, that, yeah, it's interesting. It's just like in that second tier of like somewhere in 6 to 10 in the list. So I wonder what it'll take for there to be a lot of passion to put it over the hump.
I'm also really rooting for Tunisia with The Voice of Heena Rajab, which we saw in Toronto. This is by Kauthar Benhania, who we've talked about before. She got in with The Man Who Sold His Skin in 2020, and her other semi-documentary fiction film, Four Daughters, was shortlisted. So I'm hoping this can get in. I think this is such an important film, but is so uniquely made in ways that I had never seen before. So I hope this has a final push. I haven't heard a whole lot about it. I'm not sure if it has an upcoming release as of yet this year, but really rooting for that one. I think that's kind of why I really want that to show up over maybe No Other Choice or some other films. But I know you both are also rooting for Sound of Falling to get in, which I still have to get to.
Oh, yeah.
Bennett and I have been team Sound of Falling since first viewing to get in. And even if it doesn't even necessarily need to be over Heena Rajab, I'm sorry, Nick, I would kick out Surat, as you know. But yeah, no, I think Surat, though, is really, really strong here, actually, just based on the performance. It reminds me a lot of how Society of the Snow randomly got so many nominations that one year. And now that ended up popping up in multiple places. Another one that didn't show up that I thought might was The Love That Remains, Iceland submission. I haven't seen that, but I know that Godland was shortlisted. Nick, you're shaking your head. No.
I disagree. I was not expecting that to show up. I think Godland was just honestly a totally different movie. And The Love That Remains is so... I don't say this negatively, but maybe more of a Sophia movie, that it's more subtle and Venom. Its themes are, it's somewhat magical realism, and it doesn't feel like a normal international feature nominee, I guess I'll say that.
So you're saying
maybe you
slow,
should see it though.
You're like slow magical realism. Great. That sounds right up my alley.
This is just like Vermilio from last year.
Oh yeah. I liked Vermilio. If it's slow and feels slow, normally I am in. Interesting category, though, I think. Not too many surprises, though, overall. But definitely some that we're rooting for, I think, in the next stage. Next, let's get into a branch that really always throws us for a loop here with some of their out there wild inclusions. That is, of course, the makeup and hairstyling branch. Our mentions here, we have the Alto Knights, Frankenstein, Kokuo, Marty Supreme, Nuremberg, One Battle After Another, Sinners, The Smashing Machine, The Ugly Stepsister, and Wicked for Good. So I think they always, again, like I said, they give us a few surprises. But the first thing I just want to point out is that Weapons is missing. And the reason I bring this up is because I think we've been talking about the strength of Amy Madigan's potential nomination in supporting actress being tied to a corresponding nomination in makeup and hairstyling. And now, after getting this shortlist, we know that that can't happen. So what do you guys both think about that?
That was a big surprise. A question that I have is, when we're talking about tying an actor to the makeup category and those going hand in hand, how often does that happen in supporting acting? Scrolling back through all of our winners, the makeup is really primarily associated with a lead actor and they're the one doing the transformation. So
yeah,
I guess I'll have to say, I don't know if it is going to be as important.
Yeah. The only outlier to me is like Poor Things. I mean, yes, you have Emma's wig, but like the Willem Dafoe, his work in that movie. Mm-hmm. The one thing I'll call out here is that we have a couple of examples of makeup on key supporting characters that are mentioned in the shortlist, but not weapons. So like Wicked for Good, you could go to Bach and the Tin Man. Sinners, you can go to Jack O'Connell's character. One Battle After Another, that's here because of the ending of the movie for Sean Penn. Frankenstein, I think, is our biggest example, probably, with Jacob Elordi. So I don't know. I'm worried for her. I'll say that. I think it's showing up in casting is a good sign. But I think I've just always thought of, if she gets nominated, makeup and hair comes along with her.
And she was a Halloween costume.
Yeah.
So
I mean, she's the most notable character from that movie. Yes, the leads are great. But you think of her and I don't think the makeup tie or also her hairstyling is such a detriment that she won't show up. I think casting does help for sure, because that was a surprise in that category for us. We do have a few of those lead mentions with makeup and hairstyling. Timothy Chalamet's character in Marty Supreme, Dwayne Johnson's The Smashing Machine, probably Nuremberg. I haven't seen that movie, but I'm assuming it's related to Russell Crowe. The Altonites is so funny because I think we mentioned that on our 2024 early release episode.
I think so. When we do our like big movie release, like big movie preview episode for everything coming that year, it was definitely on a different year. Like it was delayed for sure. You were so right.
And the twin Robert De Niro's, I think, is why this is here. This is kind of our outlier. I love the ugly stepsister mention for, this is a Norwegian film. I've been meaning to watch this. This is on Shudder and is like a twisted tale related to Cinderella. And the other interesting one is Kokuo, which we mentioned in international feature. So I think that double is bizarre, but really interesting as a Japanese entry, especially because also I think that film is like 3 hours long. But that getting into makeup and hairstyling really maybe shows its support in some of those other guilds or branches that maybe we don't normally think of as much. And I would say Sinners, I think, has a really great chance. Also with hairstyling, you know, I think a lot of technical categories for that film, but I think of other films and shorts with hairstyling on Black characters being very important or central to the stories. We had the animated short Hair, which won a few years ago. We have such a diverse cast here. I think that's important in thinking about how they treat hair apart from just wigs on characters.
And in looking at any of these mentions, I think like when you're doing your predictions, and we'll talk about that, it's really like strength of the movie. And then also like when you think about a branch voting, it's like who are the big industry giants that are working on something? Like, are there any cases like that where people appear? And I'll just call out The Smashing Machine. As much as I didn't care for that movie, Kazuhiro did the makeup on that.
Wow.
So that's a person where you just think, okay, like that might actually end up happening. So for anyone wondering, Kazuhiro has won the Oscar in the category for Darkest Hour and Bombshell. And he's been nominated for a few things, but I have to call him out because he was nominated for your favorite Click with Adam Sandler.
Yes. I knew we mentioned him somewhere.
Yes.
Was he nominated for Maestro?
Yes, he was. Okay. He was nominated for Maestro. This is what you remember from the Contender series. Doing that every year. It's like these names just always pop up. We're like, wait, when did we talk about this person before?
and real quick, the only nomination we haven't mentioned yet was 1 year after Click when he was nominated for Norbit.
Oh, wow.
So a man of many talents.
A man of many talents, yes.
And I'll maybe to wrap up the category, I'll say, like, God love the makeup and hairstyling branch. The way that they approach their category is what I wanted out of casting. Mm-hmm. And I think it's makeup and hairstyling and costume are usually the ones who are the maybe the most independent from other kind of group thing throughout the rest of the Academy. But this is what I wanted. I wanted the Alto Knights version of a casting mention. I don't think I need Alto Knights to be in the casting list.
Well, we still have visual effects for you. So hold on to your,
there you go.
caps there.
Sit tight.
Let's move on to music original score. So this had an eligible list of 135 submissions, which may sound like a lot, but is the lowest number of eligible scores in the past decade. Scores that were not eligible or not submitted include After the Hunt by our favorite Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, Blue Moon by Graham Reynolds, Ella McKay by Hans Zimmer, K-pop Demon Hunters by Marcello Zarvos, and The Phoenician Scheme by Alexander Desplat. I think just some of those names are interesting because they're very well-known composers. Mm-hmm. So our mentions here, we have Avatar, Fire and Ash, Begonia, Captain America, Brave New World, Diane Warren, Relentless, F1, Frankenstein, Hamnet, Hedda, A House of Dynamite, J. Kelly, Marty Supreme, Nuremberg, One Battle After Another, Sinners, Surratt, Train Dreams, Tron, Ares, Truth and Reason, Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery, and Wicked for Good. So this is quite a long list. I know we didn't mention composers along the way, but we do have a lot of very well-known composers. Hans Zimmer, who wasn't eligible for Ella McKay, is eligible for F1. I think that is a big contender. We have Alexander Desplat, again, not for The Phoenician Scheme, but here for Frankenstein. Volker Bertelmann, favorite of the category. He's shown up the past couple years. He is here for A House of Dynamite. That, I think, is the lone mention for that film today. But we have a lot of fun inclusions, too. I think Wake Up Dead Man, Surratt, again, by King Ding Rhee, has shown up with Other Bodies. That's at the Golden Globes. It's won certain awards with critics. So I think it's a great collection here. We have to mention Diane Warren, Relentless, getting in score, which I think is interesting. Not even song.
Yeah.
But she and that film were mentioned at the Hollywood Music and Media Awards, where her song, Dear Me, also won an award, which we'll get to in a second. But what do you all think of this list? Are you surprised or excited about any of the mentions?
I'm just going to add a few to the list that you named, Nick, of composers we've talked about before. So Jerskin Fendrix is here for Begonia. He was nominated for Poor Things. Laura Karpman is here for Captain America, Brave New World. She did the American Fiction score. Hildur Guðnadóttir is here for Hedda. She won for Joker, also did the score for Tar, which I love. And Nicholas Britell for J. Kelly. Lots of big names. Johnny Greenwood, Ludwig Göransson. But I don't know. I mean, this category one, I think there are just so many on this short list. Like, it's kind of hard to digest it all and make sense of it. Bennett, I'm going to ask you. So Diane Warren is not the composer on Diane Warren Relentless. It is Leslie Barber. But do you think she has enough, like, does Diane Warren's name being in the documentary have enough pull where this could happen? I'm going to say no, but I'm curious what you guys think.
I'm looking forward to listening to it if it is able to be found. I don't know how often the score for a documentary is made available on streaming or anything. I definitely hope not.
I can't wait to watch Diane Warren Relentless. I'm being so serious. I'm actually really curious about her life because we talk about her every single year. I want to know more.
And now's our chance.
Yeah, I think that also I'd say for the list in general, there weren't any big surprise omissions. I really like the Fantastic Four score from Michael Giacchino. So I was a little sad that that didn't show up. But otherwise, I do need to, I guess, like eat my hat when we see that Hamnet is in the shortlist. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people have been talking about it. When I left the movie, I was like, oh, this could be slight spoilers for the experience of watching Hamnet in case anyone hasn't seen it yet. But it so prominently features existing music from Max Richter, the composer, specifically on The Nature of Daylight, that when the movie ended and I left it, I was like, oh, it's a shame that his score is going to be ineligible because of there's too much obvious pre-existing music. Specifically because back in 2016, Arrival was disqualified from the original score race because it used On the Nature of Daylight. And that the actual score to that film wasn't even Max Richter's. That was Johan Johansson's. Mm-hmm. And then they put the Richter track at the end. But people loved this pre-existing music so much that the entire score was deemed ineligible, even all of Johansson's work. So I'm just very surprised that, you know, a decade later, I don't know if it's because it's still his music and it's not kind of competition and crediting between the two composers. But I'm surprised that still that track coming in at the end of the film and hitting with a heavy emotional impact and being probably, I think, most people's takeaway when they think about the score of the film. I'm really surprised that it didn't get disqualified.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys feel similarly.
I'm surprised, honestly. I really am, because this branch can be really finicky.
Fickle, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just don't, I don't know. I think it could still miss, which would be unfortunate, like, because I love the score of Hamnet. I think that it's a great score. It's so beautiful. But you're right. I think On the Nature of Daylight does overpower a lot of it because it's what you leave with. Like, it's the final note. It's that final emotional burst. It's tied right to that song. And I just so wish they would have done a reprise of something else from the movie because there are just so many beautiful tracks. Very happy to see Marty Supreme here. I love this score so much. I can't wait for it to be available so I can listen to it all the time. I think it's beautiful and just fun. And like I said before, Nick, I think this is like my Surratt Marty Supreme.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great score.
Mm-hmm.
I have trouble narrowing this category down because I think we have maybe a couple that feel like locks at least, but then we have like F1, Frankenstein, J. Kelly, Marty Supreme, Nuremberg, That's had a few mentions. Train Dreams, with that song mention at the Golden Globes also. So I just don't know what's going to end up making it. I will say the biggest omission, which is a travesty, is Daniel Blumberg from The Testament of Anne Lee.
Our winner from last year.
Oh my gosh, of course.
Yeah.
Oh.
And not even making it. I don't understand that. Don't even ask me about, casting or any of the other categories. I still maybe have hope for Amanda, but that number has definitely gone down.
I know.
Ugh. We have, I guess we haven't mentioned that it didn't get a single mention today.
Nothing.
Yep. Which you can do for us next with your favorite category, original song.
Wow, throwing me right into it.
Incredible segue.
All right. Yes, it is my turn stealing the mic to run us through the songs mentioned for the Best Original Song shortlist. So this year, there were 65 songs that were eligible for consideration, which is the lowest tally in 14 years. And I think I mentioned it when it first came out. There are actually three fewer songs that the Academy considered eligible than were originally reported. I don't know which ones, but the initial list was 68. And then in their press release today, it said 65. But I'm going to read off the song title and the film it's from in alphabetical order by song title. So we have As Alive As You Need Me to Be from Tron Ares, Dear Me from Diane Warren Relentless, Dream as One from Avatar Fire and Ash, Drive from F1, Dying to Live from Billy Idol Should Be Dead, The Girl in the Bubble from Wicked for Good, Golden from K-Pop Demon Hunters, Highest to Lowest from Highest to Lowest, I Lied to You from Sinners, Last Time I Seen the Sun from Sinners, No Place Like Home from Wicked for Good, Our Love from The Ballad of Wallace Island, Salt, Then Sour, Then Sweet from Come See Me in the Good Light, Sweet Dreams of Joy from Viva Verdi, exclamation, and Train Dreams from Train Dreams. So I have a lot to say about the category. This is my little pet project every year, going through the full submission list and listening to all the songs, doing deep dives into the songwriters and the artists who are singing them. And I guess I would say that this list is largely what I expected. It's a good mix of songs either from prominent films or with name singers or songwriters. We have our Diane Warren getting in every year with her with Dear Me, which the more I see the title Dear Me, the sadder it is, like oh dear me that I'm reading it that way. And then J. Ralph is also showing up once again on this short list for the Billy Idol song, Dying to Live. And J. Ralph just has like stealth a bunch of nominations from the 2010s and just like it has been popping up in the shortlist a ton. But I guess otherwise it's a lot of what I expected. I think my big surprise is Sweet Dreams of Joy from Viva Verdi. I don't know much about this movie. I did not look into because the song was uninteresting. So I will be curious to look at that a little more and see what kind of put it over the top, if there's a composer or the songwriter or something about the film that caught their eye. I'd say that in general, the big trend for this year of submissions, very few documentary submissions as compared to what there have been in the past. And it's taken up largely by a lot more just end credit ballads. I felt the proportion of that was just overwhelming this year in the list, and they all sound exactly the same. They all sound like knockoffs from what Diane Warren does. So it was a little bit of a slog to get through even the smaller list of submissions this year. But yeah, mostly ballads, a real, like, as Andre Leontali would say, a famine of bops. There's like only a couple great songs, but the big things that I predicted that might get in that missed were My Baby from Materialists, sung by Japanese Breakfast. I love that song. Clothed by the Sun in Testament of Ann Lee, as we discussed. I did not expect John's Running Song to get in, which was the other eligible title.
Yeah.
We're kind of happy that one didn't get in.
Yeah.
And then one of the other kind of certified bops from the list is Zoo from Zootopia 2.
Yes.
By Shakira, that didn't get in. I'll talk about some specific songs that didn't make the list that I want to highlight in a second, but I'll turn it over to you guys. What kind of strikes you about the list, or any surprises that you have?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I noticed was Sweet Dreams of Joy from Viva Verdi, which, you know, surprised me because I thought, what is that? Every year there are some where I'm like, what is that? But Viva Verdi is a documentary about Giuseppe Verdi. So this feels like right in this branch's wheelhouse. And this song is sung by an opera singer, Ana Maria Martinez. And that feels to me like something that we would actually see here. It's just surprising to us because we don't know what this documentary is or what this film is. But it's similar, I think, like you were talking about, Bennett, with documentaries, like not many being eligible or on the list. Come See Me in the Good Light, that's another one I'm really keeping an eye on because Brandi Carlile was just nominated last year. This is, of course, her and Sarah Bareilles. This is an activist documentary. So I think that could get in. But I don't know. I mean, we have had, for the past 2 years in this category, nominations from documentaries about musicians. Elton John, Never Too Late, and Nick's favorite, American Symphony. but it's kind of crowded. I think you have to think, because we do have the double. We have two songs from Sinners, two songs from Wicked for Good, and then the phenomenon that is Golden and Save a Spot for Diane Warren. So I'm curious how it'll shake out. I think we'll just see one song from Sinners and one song from Wicked for Good, but anything can happen.
That's what I'm thinking too, but that's already four spots. What gets that last spot? I think your argument for Viva Verdi is very strong. Another movie that has a lot of love, especially in the UK, is The Ballad of Wallace Island. And they're mentioned for their song, Our Love. It hasn't been around too much this year, so I don't know if it's actual chances, but something like that could surprise also. And again, at the HMMA's, highest to lowest won an award. So it's like, it seems like things are up in the air in terms of the other mentions. You know, we have Dream is One, which is sung by Miley Cyrus.
It's why I love this category, that it just introduces so many external factors to the awards themselves, and then primarily the show, that I think from what we've seen them nominate in the recent past, they don't really nominate with their mind on what the show is going to be. Like, we get a lot of, you know, songs that are like not really performable or not really by big artists. So I always lean that way, that maybe in the shortlist, like I said, it'll veer more either big movies or big singers. But when it comes to actual nominations, then it feels like they're cutting out many of like the popular ones who will just aid in the telecast.
Right. I do think it's interesting that Tron Ares has three mentions here, score and visual effects. I'm like, is there something with this movie that I liked it, but it's like that we don't know about with the Academy? So that's something else that's interesting, but it's not in sound. So yeah, that makes you question things, especially up against a movie like F1, where it could show up in something like sound and editing with that double. I know I'm jumping the gun on every category we have here, but thinking ahead, I guess. But again, no Ann Lee, sadly. I will be seeing that movie again when it's released and on the biggest screen possible.
I just did a 20-minute interview with Mona Fastevold yesterday, and she's so brilliant and amazing. Oh. And I wish that movie was everywhere.
Yeah.
So, Nick, you introduced sound. This is a category that will have a bake-off in January. Our mentions here, we have Avatar, Fire and Ash, F1, Frankenstein, Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, One Battle After Another, Sinners, Surratt, Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, Superman, and Wicked for Good. So you talked about, Nick, the crossover with editing sometimes. So I did want to just pull the past few years, what we've seen there, because we talk about how sometimes there's crossover. Last year, we had three films that were nominated for sound and editing. In 2023, we had one, which is pretty crazy, just one, in Oppenheimer. And in 2022, we had two films. So really, I think you can bank on a crossover of two to three in a given year. Could be a little lower, could be a little higher, but just something to keep in mind. So in this category, I feel like we had a few misses of some key picture contenders, but also not a ton of surprises here. I think we have some music-heavy films in Wicked for Good, Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, and Sinners. Nick, congratulations on Surratt again. Mm-hmm. I think actually that would be a really cool nomination because I think the sound work in that movie is pretty great. But yeah, were you guys, what were some things that maybe surprised you, or what do you think of this category?
I think seeing, like you said, Surratt show up was the thing that jumped out to me. The couple things that missed that I thought might make it in were House of Dynamite and then Warfare. As a, again, just very like sound heavy movie. So I think that it makes sense. I don't know if I have much more to say than that, actually.
That's to say,
it is a pretty like, it's a pretty momentous list.
We haven't talked a lot about Avatar, Fire and Ash today, but I forgot to mention this when we talked about cinematography. I was kind of surprised it didn't show up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even in the shortlist, because I think some people aren't predicting it there because the second one didn't get in, Way of Water. But it is still technically alive in production design. And I wonder what to make of Avatar Fire and Ash.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially after the first one won the Oscar for cinematography, that maybe a lot with Avatar Fire and Ash is old news at this point, but it not even making a 16 long shortlist.
Yeah.
Is, I mean, Nick, as I'm sure you agree, the cinematography of Song Sung Blue is more impressive than Avatar.
I don't know which is more surprising, Avatar missing or that being there.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing for me, this is our only mention of Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. That's hanging by a thread, where I think maybe earlier in the season we would have considered that to show up in casting. I think A Complete Unknown would absolutely have shown up in casting. But again, that way outperformed Springsteen. So it feels like a weird nomination just because of where we are right now. I think the Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning mention is its win, because they never seem to go for those movies or in visual effects, which it wasn't chosen for on the shortlist. And I don't know why, because I feel like that would be an easy sound mention. But again, we've been talking about a few of these movies that could overlap. And Sarat, I talked to Laia Casanovas, who worked on the sound team, and it was great hearing about her collaborating with the composer. And I think just the atmosphere and what it does with playing with diegetic sound is really interesting. So I would love to see it. That's something on Oscar nomination morning that would have me screaming at the top of my lungs.
In terms of crossover, I think One Battle After Another and Sinners are the easy callouts here of films where we will see them in sound and editing, I think, with the Oscar nominations. But watch out for Frankenstein, because I think that film is just rising and I could see it getting one or both of those nominations, especially because Marty Supreme and Hamnet missed here, which I feel like those are also two strong films in Best Picture and also have really good sound work. It's just very different. Like, Hamnet's is very subtle, but it's also Johnny Byrne who won for The Zone of Interest. And Marty Supreme, sound is such a major part of that movie, I think. And it's very strong in editing. So interesting that it missed here. But overall, I think not too many surprises.
So our final category, visual effects. This is another bake-off category, which will happen in January. This also had a long listed 20 films and was narrowed down to a short list of 10. So after I mention these 10, I'll mention the long list. And I think that kind of paints a picture of where they want to go with this category and what feels like they have done in the past. So the shortlisted mentioned films are Avatar, Fire and Ash, The Electric State, F1, Frankenstein, Jurassic World, Rebirth, The Lost Bus, Sinners, Superman, Tron Ares, and Wicked for Good. So the 10 that were cut from the long list were Captain America, The Fantastic Four, How to Train Your Dragon, Lilo and Stitch, Mickey 17, A Minecraft Movie, Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, Predator, Badlands, The Running Man, and Thunderbolts. So I think from this list, we just see a lot of Marvel and IP. Not everything, but most of them. And they definitely weeded almost all of those out. My question, because we do get some outliers in the visual effects categories, also like makeup and hairstyling, do either of you know what The Electric State is?
Yes.
Yes, unfortunately, I do.
I was like, this is our Love and Monsters from a few years ago. A movie that I wasn't against, but this with Millie Bobby Brown, Chris Pratt, Holly Hunter, Stanley Tucci by the Russo brothers feels crazy. to have beat out maybe something like Predator Badlands or Mickey 17.
Yes.
Mickey 17. Really,
yep. Mm. So really, yeah, gutting to see the extra 10 that were on the original long list. Because I did not watch The Electric State, and I will not watch The Electric State. But
well,
the name
we might
is
have
just,
to.
I might abstain. Yeah, the name of it is just associated with ugly to me, as opposed to that beautiful movie, The Lost Bus. Well, the practical effects of America Ferrera running with the water bottles.
Oh my God, The Lost Bus. This is really like, there are some movies here that I haven't seen yet. Like, I'll watch them when the nominations come out, like Tron Ares, Superman, I still need to see, Jurassic World Rebirth. I don't know how I feel about Jurassic World Rebirth, because even though it's the Korbolds who have been nominated a number of times, these movies don't get in. They're always shortlisted, but they never make it. And I feel like I've made the mistake of predicting them a few times. But I don't know. We'll see. For me, this list is really Avatar, Fire and Ash, and then four more.
Right.
And what will those four be? We will see.
I think depending on how the movie does, I kind of feel like maybe we could have something actually in the race with Avatar. I know The Way of Water was winning everything and there was nothing stopping it, but depending on how this one does and the critical response to it, I just wasn't as high on this one as I was the other ones. And I wouldn't mind seeing something like Sinners or Frankenstein, F1 even, something else coming up and really fighting Avatar to win. Again, that could be a moot statement in a month when the race is actually happening and we have our nominations, but I would like to see something like that happen.
I will say I did not care for Avatar Fire and Ash, the movie, really at all. Nick, you were sitting with me.
We had our
giggles. You know how I felt.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say I thought the visual effects were pretty stunning. Like, that is the one thing where even if you don't like the movie, I think like the visual effects are pretty great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely, I think, interest in the Avatar thing has waned a bit. I still think it's going to make a lot of money, but it's award season prospects I'm not as sure about.
Yeah, with the visual effects category, I always am on the lookout for a year like 2015 when Ex Machina won. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like it was great that it got a nomination, and it was just this little movie that had very kind of nicely integrated but effects that were not the point of the movie. I don't know what that would be for this year. I don't know if there's like a smaller movie on the list that I would want to surprise. I have not yet seen Avatar, but it does feel like the one of the only givens that we have this year is that it'll win. So if something else came in and rallied and won, that would be awesome. If we can just all write in Predator Badlands and get that nominated, I would be totally fine if that won over Avatar, but obviously it didn't even make the shortlist, so never mind.
Oh my gosh, a write-in anyway. Like Betty Davis of Human Bondage.
Right.
So I think we did a nice deep dive really into most of our shortlisted categories. Like you said, Nick, we'll be back to recap the shorts categories, and we have those nominations as part of our contender series. We're really gearing up for award season now, about to take a little break before the holidays. Nomination voting is January 12th through 16th, and then our nominations are announced on January 22nd. We will be back as a group, I think, to recap those. And then, of course, the Oscars are Sunday, March 15th, so we are a few months away. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we will actually be doing a Patreon special. We'll do a little Christmas Oscars game, so that will be really fun. And then we'll get into our Best of 2025 episode to kick off the new year. Before you go, we're going back to my question that I asked. If you could choose an Academy member to watch any of these movies just so you could see their reaction, who are you picking and what is the movie?
Okay, so I spent a little bit of time looking through people who've been invited to the Academy, and there was one obvious choice, which is Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was trying to figure out what I would like to see her watch. And what I want the image of Lady Gaga with her glasses on. the one where she was after January 6th, where she was looking for clues mm-hmm. at the Capitol. I want to see that Lady Gaga watch all of the best documentary shortlist, specifically 5 hours of My Undesirable Friends, and I want her taking notes. I want her.
She would.
Because she, and then she's just going to get in there. Every one of these, she's going to go, whatever coexistence my ass is about, she's going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. She's going to do a little research, and she will be part of the sequel. So that was my thought. To be in the room.
Indeed.
I love it.
Random idea. I wonder if she's seen any of his recent films, but I want Kathryn Bigelow to sit through Avatar, Fire and Ash. And the feat to be that she can't laugh.
I would have failed that challenge, oh, as you know.
I wonder if she's seen any of the Avatar movies.
Well, the reason I pose this question is because I want to watch Faye Dunaway watch Surratt.
Also a great one. Oh my God.
I was thinking of extremes. I was like, who needs to watch The Electric State? Scorsese watching The Electric State.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, the torture. that's torturing that poor man. Yeah, so that's my answer. I just feel like she would have such fascinating commentary for that. But yeah, fun little way to wrap up as we think about our Academy members, thousands of them, watching these movies. Thank you, Bennett, for joining us. This was so much fun.
Thank you for having me. As always, I'll throw out one shout out as my parting gift. The wrong F1 song was included in the shortlist. Mm. It should be Lose My Mind by Don Toliver and Doja Cat. That is the boppiest bop that was not included in the shortlist. So go listen to that. And otherwise, I'll be back. Thanks for having me.
Let people know where they can find you, and can they find your playlist with all of the songs on them?
Yes. Yep. My playlist is on Spotify. You can find my profile. It's bennett.prosser. And the playlist is just called 2025 Best Original Song Eligibility. If you're looking for the playlist, the cover photo is Diane Warren flipping off the camera.
Incredible. I can't wait to listen.
I also posted it on Blue Sky, where you can find me at Bennett Prosser, and then also under that same name on Letterboxd.
Well, thank you. And thank you all for listening. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, and TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. For bonus content, you can go to Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde. We also have updated nomination predictions. Thank you, Nick, for updating the website. You can find those at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.